Sport of Kings podcast. This pod, we cover the late pick five at Keeneland on Saturday, October 9th. This is show number 141, October 8th, 2021. I'm Scott Carson, founder of Sport of Kings, and I'm joined by my co-host, Hall of Fame handicapper, Chris Larmy. Chris, are you ready for Keeneland?
Yes, I am. Always look forward. I like this Keeneland fall meet much more than the spring meet. I like them both, but I really like the racing's better, and you get a lot of these Breeders' Cup preps in this first weekend, and we're going to see some of those and talk about them here in a few minutes.
Yeah, somehow it seems like there are even more stakes than usual this year. I know they added a couple, but I don't know if they've sort of front-loaded them, but there are a ton of stakes, including today, Friday, tomorrow, and Sunday.
Yeah, I think they load them this weekend just because of the, you know, the way training's evolved, and they like to give them plenty of time between races. If they wait any longer past this week, you're too close to the Breeders' Cup for most of the trainers to prep their horses. So I think that's why they load this weekend up with all the potential Breeders' Cup preps they can.
Play in the Sport of Kings NHC Qualifier starting every month. Each month, the top 50 players who are NHC Tour members advance to Round 2, which is Breeders' Cup weekend. In that final, 450 players will duke it out, playing all 14 Breeders' Cup races. Two people will win a seat to the NHC, and the top 100 will get Tour points. Join the NHC Tour before any monthly Round 1 begins. If you join the Tour, you could win up to 20 seats to the NHC in free contests. For only $50, it's the best deal in racing. If you sign up for the Tour, use promo code SPORTOFKINGS so we get credit. If you haven't signed up for our free contest with free DRFPPs, go to sportofkings.net right now. Thank you and good luck. And we have a special returning guest. He's qualified for the NHC 16 times. He finished second in the 2014 BCBC, earning $186,000. He's Paul Weiser. Paul, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Paul, how's your handicapping going?
It's been a pretty good year, other than the NHC weekend in August. I've done pretty well so far this year. Let's hope we keep it coming with Keeneland and the Breeders' Cup on the horizon.
So, Paul, I know you love Keeneland, so we're happy to have you while we're doing Keeneland. What's your best angle on that track? Like, what about it? If anybody was going to ask you, like, what should you take into consideration on Keeneland? What would you say is the key with Keeneland?
I'm not sure I have an answer for a single key. Keeneland's a really fun meet because Lake Saratoga brings together horses from all different circuits. And so you have horses that come from all over the place. You don't get in most places, and that's what makes it fun. That's what you get big prices for. I tend to focus on the circuits where horses come from. You get horses coming from from Belterra Park and, you know, places like that that people bet because they have a lot of ones in their PPs. And when they're going up against horses, you know, in the spring coming from Oaklawn or here now coming from Churchill, it's usually not a fair comparison. The other big thing I'd keep an eye on at Keeneland is they run different finish lines, and a short stretch race is very different than a regular stretch race. And I don't know that handicappers always take those things into consideration. So definitely two things I'd look at here that separate that from others.
Yeah. And to clarify, the short stretch is for every mile and mile in the 16th race.
Correct. Dirt race.
So it's really almost every two turn race other than the mile and an eighth.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, did you have
and
any questions?
Makes a real difference.
Yeah, that's the thing I like the least about Keeneland is they run all those short stretch dirt races. I much prefer the full length of the stretch. So you do have to give some extra consideration to the horses near the front or on the front in those races, because the closers have to make an early move, which typically means they have to go wide. Because if they wait until they turn for home, they usually don't have much time to make up ground. So that is something I think you definitely want to keep in mind.
Yeah, I always I'm watching a race, and then Kurt Becker says, they're going to the short stretch finish line. And I'm like, oh, no, no. That's what it seems like always happens.
Yeah, important thing to remember.
Okay, well, we're doing the pick five at Keeneland. The late pick five, it's the races 6 through 10. There are 11 races on the card, but Jim Goodman kindly made the late pick five the 6th through 10th. So it's an all stakes pick five. Starting with the 6th, it's the Woodford Stakes, a grade 2, 5.5 furlongs on turf. Purse of $200,000 for 3-year-olds and up. Paul, why don't you get us started?
Thanks. This is the race that's probably going to make or break my day tomorrow, because Golden Pal, the number 2, is 4 to 5 on the morning line. He's the big name in the race because he won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf here last year. He came back to start his 3-year-old campaign with a new top at Saratoga. And then, as Wesley Ward likes to do, they sent him to England. He ran in a race where he carried 135 pounds, threw in a clunker, and has not been seen since. Looking at Theragraph, his fastest figure ever is a 4. And there are a number of horses in here who have already run faster than him. And so my plan here is simply to toss him, who will probably be 2 to 5 or maybe even 1 to 5 when the race goes off. And if I can beat him in this first leg of the pick five, then it's really going to pay. So there'll be no Golden Pals on my tickets. I'm going to use 3 horses here. 2 of them are somewhat logical. You know, Extravagant Kid is the second choice in the morning line. What a consistent horse, right? This guy ran 9 times from May of last year to March of this year and never ran a number slower than Golden Pal's best. He's 2 best races. He ran a 1 and a 2 at Keeneland last year, but he's coming off 2 of his slower efforts overseas when they got kind of ambitious. He carries the high weight here at 124, giving between 4 and 6 pounds to everybody else. And he's an 8-year-old. So he's tough to say would be the top choice. Firecrow's the other short price. He's only had 4 turf starts, but they've all been good. His win on Preakness Day was incredibly impressive, and that would certainly win it. But it really must have knocked him out because he was off for 5 months and then came back just 2 weeks ago at Parks and ran 4 there. Could set him up well for today. I don't know. So I'm going for a huge price. I'm taking number 3, Inhalation, as my top choice. This horse showed up in North America in April going a mile here at Keeneland in a really loaded field that Gear Jockey won. She then shipped to Colonial and won 2 turf sprints. And those Colonial races are sneaky good. The last was super impressive. You should definitely watch that if you haven't. Carrying 126 pounds, she totally blew the brake, which, by the way, is not in the form comments. So you have to watch that. She was wide all the way around the track and was, you will never see a horse win easier than this one. She was barely even asked until they got deep into stretch. And then the whip never came out. It was just hand urging to the wire. Her Theragraph figures have gone from a 9 to a 4. And now with another step forward here, and given the favorable pace setup that she's going to get with all the speed signed on, at 30-1 on the morning line, she's my play, Inhalation, number 3.
Okay, one note, she is a gelding, just for the record. Chris, what did you think in this race? Chris desperately tries to click the unmute button. Chris continues.
This is not my fault. I'm having, all of a sudden I've had technical difficulties. My phone is on the blitz and so is my computer. So I don't have any notes to go on. So I'll riff here, try to get through this race, and then I'm going to try to restart my computer. But I kind of buy into what Paul said, a little bit of noise in the background. I'm against Golden Pal in here. I think Firecrow Okay, timeout. Sorry,
Paul. Paul, just hit mute.
Yeah, on, you got to hit
the
mute
button because there's a lot of shuffling.
Yeah, between that and my computer issues, I'm a little flustered. So let me pick that up. You can edit that part out.
Yeah, no, I can't edit it. So we're fine. Keep on rolling.
Okay. All right. I'm still trying to bring up my notes. Anyway, Extravagant Kid. I think, you know, could benefit from a hot early pace. Firecrow probably hooks up early with Golden Pal. I agree Golden Pal is going to get over bet. But it is a turf sprint, so one of those two could win. But it does sort of seem like it sets the table up for Extravagant Kid to come from out of it. So I probably would make my pick in here, Extravagant Kid.
Paula, right. Do you know where the mute button is?
My mute button is on. I'll put it back on now.
Okay. All right. So Extravagant okay. Kid, is that your pick?
Quick. Yeah, I'll go with Extravagant Kid. Sorry about that. Between the noise and my computer dying, that was a tough one for me. But yeah, I'll go with Extravagant Kid to sit off of the two dueling front runners, and it's kind of looks like a chalky race to me.
All right, yeah. So sorry to our listeners, but I have a very limited computer setup, and I will not have the opportunity to edit anything else out. So be good, guys. I'm going to go with Firecrow here. I think he's fast enough to win. He needed his last after a freshening. He was working great into that last race. The results from those fast workouts should come here. I don't think he's going to duel Golden Pal. I don't think it's going to be like life and death for 5.5 furlongs. I think he's going to let Golden Pal take the lead. He's going to be right off him, just like he was in the Pimlico race. He's going to swoop in. He's going to win this race. He's likely single for me. Firecrow.
I don't know about the not dueling part, but if you get that perfect trip, that could work out really well. He did draw outside of Golden Pal, which I think helps. I do think they're going to go fast, and maybe they tire late. And so the one way you might get some value out of this race is if you play Extravagant Kid over County Final, who will be the other closer in here and be at a big price. So that might be a way to make some money in the verticals in here.
Okay. I'm going to note that Firecrow was a length and a quarter off the not too fast pace in the Pimlico turf sprint. And he didn't even take the lead until after the beginning of the stretch, and he won by a neck. So I just don't see why he has to have the lead. I think it's actually beneficial for him to sit just off the lead.
Well, we'll find out.
All right, and Paul, feel free to jump in if you can hit the if you can.
I agree with you that Firecrow. I agree that Firecrow is a very live horse here, and I agree that he can stalk. I'm really troubled by that Parks race. I don't understand that the 2 week turnaround here after the 5 month layoff, and he lost a race where he did duel there. To a horse that still finished ahead of him, and then a 99-1 shot came and beat them all. So if that was a stronger race, I'd feel better about him, but I definitely agree that Firecrow's a player.
Well, he's a 9-2 morning line, and I think he'll probably go off at that, thanks to Golden Pal being hammered. What do you guys think about that? Because you were talking about him being one of the chalky horses, but 9-2 in a pick five is not that chalky.
I mean, I think anybody other than Golden Pal in the pick five is value if I'm right and he's, you know, 1 or 2 to 5. So absolutely.
Okay, well we'll move on to the seventh race, which is the Thoroughbred Club of America Stakes, grade 2, 6 furlongs on dirt, purse of $250,000 for fillies and mares, 3-year-olds and up. Chris, if you're ready, why don't you let us know? And if not, we can have Paul start, and if you're still sort of getting your computer together.
I think I can get going here. Okay, this race. To me, there's no speed in here. It looks like it sort of sets up for a horse to come from off the pace. And for me, that horse is the three horse in the midst to biz. I have no idea what that name means. Maybe somebody does. It seems like a nonsensical name for me. But that horse actually won this race last year. It's like they targeted the race this year. They gave it a prep on the scent like they did last year. I do think it has a tactical advantage. Frank's Rockettes, the other that could go, did draw the rail. But Alvarado's tends to be reluctant to send horses, so I'm hoping he'll be content to stalk. And if they do let in the mids to biz get clear early, I think that horse could definitely wire the field at a price. So I'm going to go with the three.
The daughter of Fed Biz out of Midst, the mare. So that's where you get in the midst of biz. Paul, what did you think?
I really wanted to like In the Midst of Biz here because she does have such a clear tactical edge, but she came into this race much sharper last year. And, you know, obviously they were pointing to this, but she could definitely win, but I couldn't go there. To me, I have nothing clever. I'm going to single Bells the one in this spot, the number six horse. She's just such an honest horse. She shows up every time she runs her race. She regularly runs ones and zeros on Theragraph. Her only losses are to horses like Sconson, Gamine twice, Kamari. She's not meeting any of those killers here. She's racing Flow Upgrade off of her last race. I just can't get around her, so I'm going to single Bells to one.
All right. Very interesting. I'm actually playing against Bells to one, and the reason is because she hasn't run one of her top races this year. I mean, I know she has a couple of wins, but she hasn't run one of her bigger numbers this year. And she comes in on the shortest rest that she's ever had in her career. It's, I don't know if it's exactly 3 weeks, but it's the shortest rest that she's had any time. I mean, she's always had at least 4 weeks rest. So I'm going to go against her. And the horse I'm going with is Estilo Talentoso. She bounced right off the gate in her last against Gamine. Was not going to catch that one. After doing that, is not going to catch Gamine. And Gamine also had a speed flow advantage. Now, you know, Paul and I both are adherents of, or we at least use Racing Flow to a certain extent. And Gamine benefited. I mean, she probably was going to lose anyway, but she did benefit from a speed flow. So Estilo Talentoso is not an upgrade, oddly enough, is not an upgrade from that race, but she was running against the speed flow against Gamine. So I think you can toss that race. She's had bad starts in her last three races, and she has a big race from right here at Keeneland from last spring. So I would definitely use her, but I agree with Chris also in the midst of biz. Gotta use that horse as well. So for me, the value in this pick five is going against Bells the One. It's gonna be a little battle in this race, Paul.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that Bells the One hasn't run over her best races, and but your horse has never run a race that's as fast as anything that Bells the One's run this year, and she does show up every time. She's never thrown in a clunker, so. They're both very logical horses. Yours would be my second choice if I was going to go with a second choice, but I just think Bell's the one to stand out. We'll find out.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, you know, this is a race where clearly Bell's the one is not going to get the setup that she prefers, and she'll be 4-5. And she hasn't been quite as sharp this year as she was in the past, so... To me, this is, you just have to play against her in here. It doesn't mean she can't win, but she's, to me, a big underlay. Estilo Talentoso is okay, but the thing I just do not like playing horses that don't break well consistently at 6 furlongs, especially when there's a race where there's not a whole lot of pace on. I just don't like sprinters that can't get out of the gate. And, you know, if they have one bad break where someone slams into them or something, but this is a horse that just typically doesn't break very well. So I I don't like her at all as a sprinter. So anyway, we'll see. This is an interesting race, small field, but we all have different opinions. And we'll see how it plays out on the racetrack.
I do think that I do sort of question the 5-2 morning line on Stilo Talentoso. I mean, she was 50-1 when she got second here last spring. And she comes off of, you know, what appears to be a pretty much of a clunker. And her race before that wasn't that great either. I don't know. Do you think she's as low as 5-2, you guys?
The morning line maker at Keeneland is not the best in the country, let me say that. So I don't know. I can't imagine she's shorter than Frank's Rocket, and I can't imagine she's shorter than Bell's the One. So 5-2 seems like a reach to me. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to go up a hole. I mean, part of it is she's been running against better horses, right? You know, Gamin, CC, Lake Avenue. Those horses are better. So I think that might be playing into it a little bit. But yeah, 5-2 seems a little low because I think Bell's the One's going to be like 4-5 or less, and that'll push everybody's odds up a bit. And Frank's Rocket's kind of the obvious second choice.
Yeah, I mean, Frank's Rocket has not gone off above even money in 5 races. She's going to be under 2-1, I would think.
It depends how much they hammer Bell, I guess.
I mean, I have Frank's Rocket as a use in here, marked down as a use in the pick 5. I'm not sure about the pick 5. I'm not sure. I haven't fleshed it all out, but my initial reaction was, you got to use her, especially if you're going against Bell's One, which I am. So,
but yeah,
I think
don't
Frank's Rocket goes under 5-2.
Yeah, but don't go too much off the recent morning line. She's been running against, you know, nothing. You know, she went to Colonial and Prairie Meadows. Of course, she's going to be heavy favorite in those two races. So, you know, her recent races, I wouldn't put too much stock on that. But yeah, I think she's going to be a clear second choice.
Well, she was 5-1 in the Breeders' Cup Sprint at Keeneland last November. So she gets played, usually gets played. Okay, we'll go to the 8th race. It's the First Lady Stakes, a Grade 1 mile on the turf, purse of $400,000 for fillies and mares, 3-year-olds and up. Paul, what did you think here?
This is a really wide open race. And so normally what I do in a field such as this is I look through the thoroughgraph and determine what's the number it's going to take to win the race. And so I settled on that you're going to have at least a 3, and that eliminates almost half the field from consideration. And of the 8 that have run a 3 or better, you know, only 3 really stood out. You know, Althika is going to be the favorite. Again, this 7-2 morning line is kind of crazy. She's got to be much shorter than that, right? I mean, Charlie Appleby's mooning with everything he sends over to North America. This horse is 2-2 here. She ran a 3 and then backed that up with a 1.5. I mean, who knows what she runs now?
Yeah, 5-2 would be like a miracle on her, I would think.
Yeah, crazy. Harvey's Little Goyle is another one that's ran a 2.5 at Saratoga. Dalika ran a 1.75 in Kentucky Downs last time. She's a really big price. I'm going to use them all in the pick 5. But the one that I'm going to make my top pick and the wild card in this race is number 2, Empress Josephine, who has kept great company in Europe. Ships over here for Aidan O'Brien, gets John Velasquez as the only 3-year-old in the field. She gets a 3-pound weight break from everybody else. And I'm actually really curious about both of your thoughts on that. The Queen Elizabeth II Stakes is next week, where she could have run against her own age group at Keeneland. And so this is a very aggressive placement. I'm not sure why they would run her here instead of next week when she would have faced a much easier group. But if O'Brien thinks this is the right spot and a 10-1 on a morning line in a wide open race, I'll make her my top pick, number 2, Empress Josephine.
Empress Josephine, I think, if I'm reading it right, I think she only has 2 wins. What did you think here, Chris?
Well, I don't think this morning line is just a really, really terrible morning line. So I wouldn't pay much attention to any of the prices that are shown on this morning line. I don't think it's anywhere close to what it'll be at post time. So that's one thing to keep in mind. Empress Josephine at 10-1 might be interesting, but I just toss every O'Brien horse he sends over here. And every once in a while, they fire, and he did win with a couple at Belmont this year. But now his record in North America isn't that great, and she just doesn't look that good to me. I just don't like that horse at all. That 10 to 1, I wouldn't blame Paul for playing it, but I don't think he'll get 10 to 1. And I think there's a lot of other more interesting horses in here. It is a big field, but I don't think it's that wide open. I think there's only maybe five or six that could win. It's, to me, this is a race where there's not much pace on. And one thing to keep in mind is Charlie Appleby's been winning like crazy, and Altica's won twice. But both other times she won, they brought her stablemate over. I think it was Summer Romance was the name of the horse. And she was the, you know, the engine to Altica's caboose, and they didn't bring her this time. Not sure why. They probably have a good reason. But not having her stablemate in here could really hurt her chances, because Blowout, I think, really has a good chance to clear early and go wire to wire. That 8-1 mooring line is just stupid. I'm not going to get 8-1. I'm not sure what you'll get, but maybe with the big field and some other options, you could get maybe 4-1, and that seems like fair value on Blowout. So I think she's the most likely winner. And if they do pound Altica, Blowout, I think, could be playable. And she gets Flavian Pratt, which is, I think, a good fit as well. And I don't think the post will bother her at all with her. She's going to clear. So I'd go with the 9 Blowout.
I wouldn't hate on that morning line that much. I mean, there's a lot of good horses in here. A lot. I mean, there's 13 horses altogether. Princess Grace is going to scratch. I did read that today in the racing form. So she's going to go straight to the Breeders' Cup Mile, I believe.
Blowout was 9-2 in her last race against the boys at Saratoga in a grade one, with, you know, horses like Casa Creed, Set Piece, Get Stormy, Raging Bull. She was 9-2.
And now, I know, and she finished fourth.
Beaten two lengths. But now she's going to go off at 8-1 in this field. There's no possible.
Yeah, maybe she goes off at 6-1. But, like, you know, you'll take it.
I think Chris is right. 4-1 is probably closer to what you're going to end up with here. She has a clear pace advantage. People can see that. She's not for me, but I think she'll get bet.
All right. Well, we can argue, you know, we can spend a lot of time arguing about what the odds are, but
you're the one that brought up the odds last time. This is the worst morning line on the card. So that's, I thought I'd illustrate that here. So.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Is it my turn now? Okay. I'm going to go with Harvey's Little Goyle. She prefers turf, and maybe we get a little price off the three apparently bad efforts. I am a little bit worried about Junior Alvarado keeping her wide, which he did last race. But I think she's ready to run the race of her life. And that's really the only opinion that I have in the race. I mean, I do think Altica's got a great shot, but Harvey's Little Goyle, that's the one for me.
Anything else, Paul?
No, I think I covered him.
I'm with you on Harvey's Little Goyle, Scott. I agree. That's probably the main contender. She did kind of get her doors blown by Altica the last time they faced each other, but that race, Altica kind of got lucky, and Mike Smith got lucky, and a hole opened up on the inside, and she slipped through, and Harvey's Little Goyle had to go wide. So if she can get a better trip, I think she's a possibility in here for sure. The other one I think you got to consider is the 6-horse Regal Glory. That's a really consistent Chad Brown horse. If she gets the trip, she's been training well, you know. If she gets a trip, she certainly would be no surprise. But, we haven't talked about a lot of the others, and I think most of those others are more pretenders than contenders. So, you know, with this big field, I do think you can narrow it down a little bit.
See, Regal Glory is interesting to me because she's a super consistent horse, but this is where Theragraph really is a differentiator, right? Where she's run her last six races, she's run the same number. And that number isn't going to win this race. So I'm just not sure why she would move through. And that's why I can't play Blowout. who has a clear pace advantage, but again, has never run a number that's fast enough to compete with horses that have already run faster in this field. And so at prices that are not going to be huge, I'm not going to take a horse that's going to have to run faster than they ever have against horses who've already run those numbers.
Yeah, the only part I disagree with you is they don't have to run faster. They just have to get the better trip. Blowout's going to get over to the rail. That's worth a couple points right there on many of the horses in the race. I mean, whether she runs faster or not. So, and plus, she
I agree with that, but that's true of every race the Blowout's ever run, because she's a front runner and is always on the lead, and she still hasn't run a number fast enough to compete, so I don't know why that would change tomorrow.
No, what I mean is she doesn't have to run faster. She gets the rail. That's why she wins races with those numbers, because she's saving ground. She's on that rail the whole way around. She doesn't have to run any faster, and she still could beat Altica if she goes three wide. That's what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
Anyway, this is getting a little bit esoteric for the non-sheets players, but you know, getting on the saving ground on the turf is an immense advantage, and it's worth several lengths, especially if you save ground on both turns. If other horses have to give up some ground, and so you can get away with running a slower race and still win, or still finish ahead of other horses that actually ran maybe a better number on the sheets.
Absolutely well, agree.
If I play the pick five, I think I have a good chance of playing Daddy's a Legend. She's 12-1 morning line. I think she goes off much higher than that. She was 25-1 in her last, and she finished fifth. I kind of like the way she's getting closer and closer to her 4-year-old best. And she's had plenty of space since her last race. I wouldn't shock me to see a horse like this win it at 25-30-1.
Note on her too is she loves the Keeneland Turf Course.
Three for five.
Yeah. And at the price, she's definitely one worth considering.
Yeah, she could be a big price too.
Okay, well, it's going to be really fun. I'm opening up my Saturday schedule. Well, it's not that hard to do, but I'm going to make sure that I'm in front of the TV from races 6 through 10 tomorrow. We'll then go to the ninth race. It's the Claiborne Breeders Futurity, a Grade One, 1/16 on dirt, purse $500,000 for 2-year-olds. Chris, what did you think?
I like this race for a couple reasons. One, the favorite is stuck out and post 13 and has never, he's only has one start and never gone the distance. So could be a super horse. And if it is, it may gallop in here, but I just love playing against those kinds of horses. This is another one where I think the morning line's way off, that the 13 Classic Causeway won't go off at 5-1. So to me, that's a horse you try to beat in here. There's all kinds of ways you can go, and I'm sure we'll talk about several of these before we're done. But the most interesting one to me, because there's an angle I've been waiting to play, and this is my first chance to do it, is the 7-horse American Sanctuary. One of the angles I've been wanting to play is to play some of these Monmouth horses racing other places where I think it was clear that if they had had a whip for some encouragement in the stretch, it would have made a significant difference in the performance that they had at Monmouth. And, this is the horse to fit that American Sanctuary. If you look at the comments and the running line, you don't really see anything in this horse. I'm trying to remember. Let's see if I can look it up. Yeah,
everybody's looking at their comments right now, including me.
Yeah, it says the horse swept to the lead but was no match. That was the comment. So it sounds like the horse made an early move and then hung late. But if you watch the race, first of all, didn't have a great trip early on. It kind of got a horse got goofy on the first turn and it forced the horse out wide and it kind of lost some ground there. And then it kind of got in between horses in the backside and shuffled back again to last. So it was kind of an uncomfortable spot all the way around. But where it gets real interesting is right as they're heading into the turn, it's just outside of the horse Double Thunder, who's the one horse and actually the morning line favorite in this race. And the Paco Lopez is riding that horse, really puts that horse into a drive, you know, really pushing and shoving on him. And then American Sanctuary is sitting out right outside him, and it basically starts to pick it up all on its own. That rider doesn't ask at all. The horse just starts picking it up. And with every stride, it's kind of pulling away from Double Thunder. And it's by the time they pull out, they spin out of the turn, the horse had opened like three or four lengths on the field. It looks like it's gone. Just it's going to win for fun. And this all of a sudden, the horse just stopped running. I mean, it just stopped. It almost, I wouldn't call it prop, but I mean, it just totally lost focus. Sophie Doyle's probably not the kind of rider you want to have in a, you know, at Monmouth where you don't have a whip. She's not the strongest finisher naturally. And the horse just quit running, just like, oh, I'm done. And Double Thunder swept past him, you know, opened up like three lengths. And then like the last 100 yards, the horse, oh, wait a minute. I guess this race is still on. And then he just dug back in and almost got to, you know, almost got to Double Thunder and galloped out past him. So to me, that was a great example where if this horse had had, there had been a whip in Sophie Doyle's hand, it could have been a completely different result. And hopefully she's riding back. I was kind of hoping we get a different rider, but she's riding back and hopefully she learned from that. And with a little bit of encouragement or at least a little more maturity, American Sanctuary could, I definitely think this horse can turn the tables in Double Thunder. Now, whether that's good enough to win, we'll see. But the disparity in price makes this horse a really good value. So this is kind of my pod pick of the week, the 7 American Sanctuary. I'm going to try to play the no whip Monmouth angle. This is my first chance to try to cash in on that.
All right, American Sanctuary. I have as a use, and especially because he is second time, two turns. Paul, what did you think?
I also agree with Chris on American Sanctuary. This is one of those where looking at the comments in the forum is very, very deceptive, right? The comment on the one is that he was geared down, and I guess in some sort that's true, but he was geared down because American Sanctuary, once he got to the lead, stopped running. And if you watch that race, you could clearly see that American Sanctuary had a lot more than what the final line shows, and still came back to make it close at the end. Earned a better Theragraph figure than Double Thunder did, and definitely looks like the better of those two, I would think. And at three times the price, if the morning line is to be believed, American Sanctuary is definitely the play here for me as well.
Okay, two for two, the double-barreled pick on American Sanctuary. I'm actually going with the horse just to the inside, Rattle and Roll. The horse was slammed after the start of his last race. Watch the race, just gets absolutely hammered. Ran super gamely in and amongst horses. Won handily, had a huge gallop out with the ears pricked. I think the horse should improve off the last, and I think that's probably enough to win here. 6-1, I'll take it. I don't know if other people are going to look at that trip and say, you know, the horse is going to get bet, but this is kind of like King Fury, the connections, McPeak, Brian Hernandez, and a closer. That's who I'm rolling with, although I'm definitely using American Sanctuary.
Yeah,
I have several others here, but I'm...
Go ahead, Paul.
Go ahead, Chris. Okay, sorry. I have several others here I'm going to use as well. It's a very wide open race. I don't think you can toss Classic Causeway. I mean, his race was one of the most impressive debuts of the year at Saratoga. His Theragraph number is 2.5 points faster than anybody else's run. His breeding suggests two turns shouldn't be a problem. The post I get, and I guess we'll have to see what kind of price it is. I agree with you. The 5-1 morning line is kind of a fantasy, but you know, even at 3 or 4-1, he'd be a very strong play, and I definitely want to use him. The other one I'm really interested in is the 9 Great Escape. He moved forward from a 13-8 from his first to second start. He figures to move forward again off of that, and should be right there. We could talk about some others as well, but those would be my main three that I focus on.
Yeah, won't disagree. Oh, go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Your comment is more interesting than mine, I'm sure.
I don't know about that. I agree the things that both of you said. Those horses are contenders. There are two other real long shots in here that I like other than American Sanctuary. One is Costa Terra, the 11 horse. It's bred to like the added distance. I don't like the post, but I think it can, you know, drop back and maybe get a trip in here. Asmussen's just really good. Horses tend to improve. This horse had excuses in its first few. I think there's a lot more in the tank, especially stretching out. I'm looking at the Sport of King odds, and it's like 71-1 on Sport of Kings right now. And then the horse just to its outside, again, the post is not ideal, but the 12 Kevin's Folly has really worked well since its last. It's another stretching out for the first time. That's really bred to stretch out. So, you know, those two, to me, first time routing, you know, they might jump way up. But the post is the reason I'm not as excited about them as I could be. But they're ones you want to consider. But I think my play in here is the 7 American Sanctuary.
Paul, sorry, I was.
Let me throw two more big prices out too, since we're on that roll.
Before you do, what was the, you had Classic Causeway, American Sanctuary. Who was your third one? Because I missed that. I was concentrating
great,
on
Great Escape, the number 9.
Escape. All right, bring it on.
And then the fourth one I do is number 4, Seal Beach. Again, 30-1 on the morning line. This horse just ran second to Great Escape. Before that, he ran second to My Prankster, who was an impressive debut winner for Pletcher at Saratoga. He's had a little bit of trouble in both of those and is not far off. Bit of a reach, but 30-1, I'm going to include.
And you had one other, you said.
Yeah, just I'm using American Sanctuary as my top pick. Classic Causeway, Great Escape, and Seal Beach. That's it.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to mention one horse. I'm not picking it to win, but it's really interesting. That's the 8 horse, King Curlin. I actually picked it to win in its last race where it was making its first start on the turf. First time start, period. But the barn just wins everywhere, and it was a weird spot last time, and it ran second at a big price. And now they try it in its second start, you know, in this grade. Well, I think it's a grade 1 race. First time dirt, second start. It's a maiden, just a crazy spot. But this barn just tends to, they always run. So I couldn't play the horse, but I wouldn't be shocked if it did some running at some point in the race. And it could be like 100-1 in here. And it maybe hits the board or something.
You guys know love for Rattle and Roll, huh?
I think it's okay. I just at the price, you know, I think this one's going to get bet some, and there's just others I think will be much bigger price with just as good a chance. But I don't dislike the horse.
I mean, it's a 13 horse field. Looking at the Sport of Kings odds, and this is the Keeneland Select Contest, where 591 people have made picks. Stellar Tap is the favorite at 4-1. And then you got a tie at 7-1 between Double Thunder, Don't Wait Up, Great Escape, and Classic Causeway. And then and Rattle and Roll is sitting there at 9-1. So, you know, it does seem like that there's not going to be a heavy favorite in this race, and all the prices are going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of race, I don't know if you can trust the Sport of Kings odds much or the morning line. The big speed figure on Classic Causeway, I think, is going to get a lot of people's attention. But we'll see. We'll see. Maybe the morning line is right. I doubt it.
I'll be shocked if Classic Causeway doesn't go out to favorite. Whether he wins or not, I'll be shocked if he's not favored.
Yeah, he's likely to be favored. I don't know. It'll be interesting. Certainly, I've never seen more commotion made over a morning line than this particular race, at least on Twitter. We'll move to the 10th race. It's the Keeneland Turf Mile, a grade 1 mile on turf, purse of $750,000 for 3-year-olds and up. Paul, what'd you think?
So again, here I start out by looking at what number it's going to take to win this race. And I think you're going to have to run at least a one, which narrows us down to only four contenders. Pixelate, who ran a zero at Kentucky Downs last time, is good, and he's improving. Order of Australia, who won the Breeders' Cup Mile last year and has run against some of the best horses in Europe, including Palace Pier and Alcohol Free. These are much softer company, so he certainly fits. Ivar is a horse I've always liked. He's probably the best horse in the race, but he's only run once this year, and that was kind of a dud at Churchill on Derby Day. He's the defending champion in this race. He certainly has numbers that are good enough, and I don't know how much confidence I have. So I'm going to try Paulo Lobo's other horse as my top pick, number three, In Love, at 20-1 on the morning line. This horse is rapidly improving. He earned a new top at Kentucky Downs last time. He has a pattern that indicates potential improvement for more still. He'll need that forward move, but again, that 20-1 in the morning line, when only four contenders have run a number that is fast enough to win, I want the one that has by far the biggest price, and that's number three, In Love.
In Love, I consider my pick as well. Chris, what did you think?
Well, one note I'd make is I wouldn't trust any Kentucky Downs numbers. If they improve significantly, I wouldn't expect them to run back to that. And they run poorly, I wouldn't hold it against them too much. It's a weird track, and the run-ups are all weird. And the speed figures, I think, aren't to be trusted. So that's just one point I would make. So be careful about putting too much stock in those Kentucky Downs numbers. I agree, though, this is a pretty good field, but there's question marks on the two favorites. I mean, Ivar probably is, he's 5-1 morning line. He'll probably be the favorite, or he or Order of Australia. And, he is coming off a layoff, and his trainer is just terrible off the layoff. And this is probably a prep for the Breeders' Cup. I'm thinking they're still thinking this horse is a Breeders' Cup horse. There's reasons why I would be reluctant to play him, although if he fires, he certainly could win. And Order of Australia, again, a Dane O'Brien, he did win with this horse at a big price in the Breeders' Cup, and it does seem like the horse is kind of rounding back into form, but it drew the outside. It has Johnny Velasquez. To me, that's a recipe for a three-wide trip, so I don't care how fast it is. It's really hard to win going three-wide on both turns. So, that horse, I think you can't really trust. So I was trying to find a price and I just couldn't really find one I liked at a big price. So I ended up kind of settling on the 13 horse, Some Like It Hot Brown, who drew the outside, but I think it can easily clear this field. It's got the speed definitely to go right to the front. And if it doesn't, I think it could at least get over to the two path. If somebody else really wants the lead, I think they could just stalk the leader. Last time at Kentucky Downs, it got beat. But, that was a race where they went crazy fast early. And it's a track that typically favors horses coming from behind anyway. So I think it was really against the flow in that race. And it's got a lot of good races this year. And I think it might have a perfect trip in here, and maybe it could float up above that morning line. On Sport of Kings, it's 18-1. I don't think you're getting anything close to 18-1, but you might get above that 9-2 morning line. So to me, Some Like It Hot Brown is probably where I'd go the 13.
Well, I agree. This is a pretty wide open race. I agree also with Paul that In Love is getting good at just the right time. I think the difference, the horse reminds me of Ivar last year. The difference is that this horse didn't run just a breakout number. Ivar ran a huge number right before the Breeders' Cup and then regressed just very slightly. Whereas this horse ran an improved number. And I think it wasn't a breakout number, so I think that can repeat the number or even improve on it. So that's why I like In Love. I also like the post position. I think you can get a good trip on the inside there. But I would also go pretty deep in this race. And horses that are interesting to me are Tell Your Daddy, and Monarch's Glen. I think some like it Hot Brown is a possible use, and given that those early pick five, those early odds on Sporta Kings is probably a definite use. And I would also, did I say Monarch's Glen? Monarch's Glen for Michael Maker, I think ran, matched his best race last race. And then I think that there's another, no, he didn't match. He matched two races ago. He matched his best race and then had a bit of a slow start in his next race. The other horse that I'm sort of interested in to crash the super is Brown Storm, who ran a pretty solid number in his last race at 32-1. I think can get in the money here, might have the lead, and some like it Hot Brown may be stalking and saving that ground, could hang around and be in the super.
Paul, jump in if you have anything else.
Yeah, the only other horse I'd mention, and I'm not sure I'd want to go to some of those, Scott, the only other horse I'd mention since he hasn't brought up is Space Traveler. He's run three times in North America. He's improved his figure in each of those, finishing second last time in the Woodbine Mile, so obviously keeping good company. Again, he'd have to move up a little bit, but he's the one that I could project some improvement since he has taken a step forward in every North American start. And he'd be the other one I'd take him out here.
Yeah, I like Space Traveler probably as my second choice because he's really been against the flow in those last two races and run well. And he ran well a couple of years ago back in the U.S. I think he actually still has some upside, especially if he, you know, gets a little more favorable setup and he drew an inside post. And he's got a pretty good rider that most people won't recognize probably. So, yeah, I could see Space Traveler. It's all about the odds with him. I'm just not sure how they're going to bet that horse. I'm afraid he might take a little money, but yeah, I could see that one.
He's been double figures in each of his North American races, and he hasn't won yet. So I'd be surprised if he isn't high. I'd be surprised if he isn't significantly higher than a 6-1 morning line.
Yeah, and if he does go off at higher than 6-1, you know, like if he gets significantly above that, definitely an interesting horse in this race.
Agree.
I haven't watched replays, but the more I'm looking at Monarch's Glen, the more I like. Ran his best race as a four-year-old in Europe and just got back to that number, at least on the Thoroughgraph figures, two races ago. And when Michael Maker gets these older turfers back to their best, they usually improve. So the horse matched its best at Mountaineer, then had a little bit of an off race at Kentucky Downs, ready to move forward. Tough post. So, you know, I certainly, it's not my top pick. I still like In Love, but I would absolutely include Monarch's Glen. And what do you guys think this pick five pays?
Well, if I'm right and Golden Pal loses, or if Chris is right and Bell's the One loses, then I think it pays a lot. So let's hope, but I'm thinking a four-figure return at minimum.
Ooh, I'm thinking that maybe they both lose and it's a five-figure.
There you go. I like what Scott's thinking. I think the way to play it is kind of along the lines of what Paul hinted at, I think, is that you play it so you beat either one or both Golden Pal or Bell's One, because those are small fields. And if you play to be, you know, one or both, then you kind of know you've got a decent score and you can be a little more loose in the way you play the other three races. But I think you got to be tight and you got to beat at least one of those favorites in those early legs. That's the way to play it. The other thing to keep in mind is they have this new all turf low takeout pick three. And all three races are part of this sequence, the 6th, 8th, and 10th. Now, that might be an interesting way to play. It's got a high minimum, I think, $3. And, you know, you get three turf stakes races and with a low takeout. So, to me, I'm going to give that a shot. I think that might be a nice new bet to incorporate into your play.
I'm glad you brought that up, Scott. That's a very, Chris, that's a very appealing bet. 15% takeout again, low takeout, $3 maximum makes it less appealing to the computer players who want to get 9 million combinations in every race. And so I think that's one that's really approachable for regular bettors. I'm definitely planning on playing that.
Okay, well, did you guys have any other plays on the card?
I just want to point out, I would just point out, you know, Scott knows I'm a big Racing Flow supporter, and whenever they have a bold upgrade, they're automatic plays to me, and I definitely have a positive ROI playing those just blind. They're that good, and there are two of them in tomorrow at Keeneland. I have not looked at either race in depth, and at first glance, neither one looks very good on paper, but I will put them out there. In race one, number 7, John E's Cowboy, and race 2, number 7, Tapped Off, are Racing Flow bold upgrades, and to me, they are automatic plays, so they might be worth taking a look at.
Yeah, my only concern about that is that they also have the 12 as a regular upgrade in the first race, and there's only 10 horses. So I have to look at the numbers to see if that really looks like a bold upgrade. Do you ever look at the numbers and sort of disagree with Racing Flow and say, like, this horse is an upgrade, I'm going to play it?
Yes and no, right? I mean, I buy their data for a reason, so I'm going to trust their judgment and what they do, but more with downgrades than upgrades, because the horses who get perfect trips get downgrades from them, and oftentimes horses get perfect trips because they're tactical and they put themselves in position to get perfect trips. That's not a downgrade to me. But their algorithm is awfully good at picking up things, and again, just blindly betting these things has had a very good positive ROI, so I can't argue with success.
Well, it's interesting because I'm looking at Johnny's Cowboy right now, and I see why they love him. He's a quick to zip upgrade. It was a closer flow, but he moved too early, took the lead at the top of the stretch, ended up being second, and that was on turf. But when it comes to these upgrades, it sort of doesn't matter whether they're on turf or dirt. If it's a bold upgrade, it's a bold upgrade. So people should give extra consideration to John E's Cowboy in the first.
So I just have one interesting note. I'm not necessarily a bet, but in the 11th race, there's a horse, the three horse Hitting Bombs, who's been kind of working and holding his own with Classic Causeway, who's the likely favorite in the Breeders' Futurity. So Hitting Bombs is 9-2 on the morning line. Might get bet down to 2-5 because of that. But I'm just saying, if Classic Causeway is as good as some people think, then Hitting Bombs would seem to be a standout in that maiden race in the nightcap. So just something to keep in mind. You can wait and see what Classic Causeway does, but certainly that horse has talent based on its debut at Saratoga. So you would think Hitting Bombs has some ability as well. It's making its second start.
Okay, well, that'll wrap it up for today. I'd like to thank our guest, Paul Weiser. Paul, thanks for handicapping with us.
Thanks for letting me join you. I always love this show. You guys do great work.
And it's great to have you. I know we had some winners the last time you were on. Let's hope we deliver again on this pod. That will conclude show number 141 of the Sport of Kings pod. Good luck at Keeneland and wherever else you bet. And please enjoy the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout.
I'll see you on Sport of Kings. Cheers.
Giddy up.